So first of all, I wanted to just explain a little bit of our format this morning, and then I'm going to introduce our panel we have. You know, as we go through this sort of this transformation, you know, we obviously at Microsoft don't think that we have all the answers, not even close. And so we asked some of our customers to come and share with you sort of their experiences in moving to online. And as you know, there's no one right answer for any customer. So we tried to pick kind of a diverse set that actually all had sort of different strategies in how they do it. And what we've asked them to do is to be very unfiltered in this session. We really want to get the learnings out. It's really valuable for you if you get that. It's not here to do a plug for anything that we have or anything along those lines. I'm going to introduce them. They're going to do a little bit about themselves and their company and their transformation. And then we'll have sort of a Q&A up here. But then we're also going to have a Q&A with you as well. And that actually is super valuable. I hope you guys have lots of questions for them and for us. And that's kind of the format. So hopefully we'll have a little bit of fun. And hopefully it'll be valuable for you as well. So first, let me just introduce to you who we have here this morning. So we have Martina Massa from Air Malta. We have Simon Denton from Mott MacDonald. We also have Anis Munk from Carlsberg, one of my favorite customers. I'm Canadian by trade, so. And then we have Ali Shadman from Computer Sciences Corp. And we also have Bob Davis, who is our VP in Office Engineering and runs our Office 365 customer experience team, which is responsible for all of our customers' deployment and adoption and has been doing that for a long time. And so he'll actually share with you a little bit of that. And myself, I'm Quinn Nickel. I work also in the Office BG, and I run our Office 365 deployment team that's customer facing. So first I'd like to just turn it over to Martina, who will give us a little bit of background on her company and her experience.
Great. Hi. Hello, everybody. Good morning. I'm Martina Massa. I'm a turnaround CIO, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Air Malta story, because it'll give you a little bit of context as to why we're here, and then we can answer some of the questions through the panel. So just I'll move on to the next couple of slides. Thank you, Quinn. Okay. Now, how many people here have been to Malta or flown on Air Malta? How many people know where Air Malta is? Okay, great. We've got around three or four. Fantastic. Malta is a tiny island in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's south of Italy, north of Libya. 5,000 years of history. It's got temples, prehistoric temples older than Stonehenge. And it's English-speaking, and it's actually quite a trading nation. Because of its location, it has always been trading between Europe and Africa. So it's got a very, very interesting culture. But it's a lot more than sun and sand and sea. It actually is also has quite a lot of industry. It has a financial services sector. It has e-gaming. It has also a lot of pharma. So it's actually quite an interesting small island. I'll slow down, guys. So the other thing about Malta is it's really gone through a massive tourism influx. Now, Air Malta is the national airline. It's a scheduled carrier, so it's a bit like the, you know, American Airlines or the British Airways. So it has a lot of legacy built into it. And it's what I call a really small and resilient survivor. In this day and age, you really cannot survive as a 10-aircraft airline. You just don't have the economies of scale, you don't have the size, you don't have the scale. Now, we actually service 1.8 million passengers, and 80% of those passengers are from outside of Malta. So the actual local kind of market is very, very, very small. Now, we have around 1,200 employees, and interestingly, 70% of our employees are mobile. They don't have a desk. So they're actually cabin crew, flight crew, on the passenger handling, ground handling. So it's very interesting because we had a challenge of having a legacy environment, a mobile workforce, and a struggling airline. So 5 years ago, the European Commission mandated a restructuring of the airline. The airline was losing a lot of money. And so we actually had to step back and actually rethink the overall business model. So just moving forward, I'll talk a little bit about the technology. Okay, that's me. I think the slides were a little bit in the wrong direction. Thank you, guys. So just next slide. Thanks, Quinn. One more. Okay, brilliant. So what we inherited was a massive challenge. We were mandated to cut costs, not by 10 or 15%. We were mandated to cut costs by 50%. Now, when you have to cut costs by 50%, you have to rethink your business model. You cannot actually still stay with the old way of operating. That was the first one. The second challenge we had was the airline had been losing money for decades, so they had not invested in technology at all. They actually, we had legacy infrastructure. Most of our servers were out of date, end of life. Operating system licenses were end of life. So we really had a massive legacy infrastructure problem to deal with. And third of all, we had what I call nasty lock-ins in some of our contracts. So we had to renegotiate a lot of these contracts, and often in a very difficult situation. So in a situation where you're trying to pull a contract out from a supplier and renegotiate it or move to another supplier. So within that context, one of the areas we had to look at was where do we turn around the IT department with a massive level of impact? Where can we drive our costs? And one of the key opportunity areas was our email exchange program. We were spending over €500,000 a year for 1,200 licenses. And that was for, you know, not even with an upgrade path as well. So our first thing we did was say, look, we need to pull Exchange out of where we are now, and we need to migrate it to the cloud. So I had a challenge because Exchange was running on a private cloud, and we had to terminate that contract, and it was a very, very messy termination. So the mandate we were given was 10 weeks. Now, it's an insane project to move all of your company, all of your licenses, all of your employees in 10 weeks from nothing to 100 overnight. So I went to Microsoft, they're actually in our building, and I said, this is my problem. I've got 10 weeks to move everything to the cloud, and we have no resources that know Office 365, we have no skills, we have no time, we have 1.8 million passengers in the air, you know, so we cannot make a mistake. And so their message back to us was, there's a team called Fast Track, and I'll be answering questions about Fast Track later on today. But net-net, we did it. We did it in 10 weeks flat. The whole company got migrated. We saved 85% of our costs. Our costs went from €500,000 to under 100,000. And we had absolutely no incidents at all. Service was completely seamless. So that's our story. I'll hand over to Simon.
Great, next, thank you, Martina. Next, I'll introduce Simon.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm Simon Denton. I'm the business architect with a company called Mott MacDonald. Just so I gauge your opinion, anyone heard of us at all? No? Apart from the ringers in the audience. We are not associated with the rather large burger flipping company. We do something completely different. Yesterday's heavy rain was carried through one of our tunnels and taken away to be cleaned away. We do other things, from building metros to new universities in Australia, to teaching people, nurses how to teach. And I'm going to distract my own glossy video. So we are one company. We operate in 150 countries around the world, 16,000 employees. And about 2 years ago, we made the decision to go with Office 365. So you catch me at the point where we've done virtually all the hard work. So we've moved from Exchange on-premise to the cloud. We're currently going from Link towards Skype 2015 to make the step up into Skype Online. We've switched all the services on, so we've lit up Yammer, SharePoint. We're building our intranet. And we're at that point where we go, right, okay, services on, what happens next? We've got to keep growing and got to keep moving on. One of the great drivers to where we wanted to be was the 2008-2012 recession, where we came out of it and said, we've got to change the company. So if anyone saw what happened to construction, it took a really, really big hit. It took a long time for the construction industry to come out. And we made a big decision that we can't really go back to that again. We can't live through that process again. We've got to get smarter. We've got to get mobile. We've got to create opportunities where there are gaps that didn't exist before. And when we started looking at that as our vision, we realized that actually Office 365 will be the vehicle to get us there. And that's where we tied it into a really big business transformation program that we're going through right now. So that's who we are. This is what we're doing. We do it all ourselves. It's all in-house. We have used the Fast Track resources to give us some help. but we are a small team and moving forward. So that's us.
Great. Thank you, Simon. Next, we'll have Anis Munk from the Carlsberg Group.
Hello. In Carlsberg, we make beer. How many have had beer? Great. Our journey with Office 365 actually started a while ago, because the background for us was that 15 years ago, we were a very small company, but with a big brand. We were well known in Asia and Eastern Europe and Western Europe. Not so much in the US, where it's more of a small premium brand, but definitely in the rest of the world. But the problem for us was that a lot of the large breweries were buying up companies. And the first thing you say as a competing brewer is stop brewing Carlsberg. And so we were losing market shares, particularly in the 90s. And then over around from since late 90s, and you can switch to the next slide, we started buying breweries instead. So we had this journey of going from being a very small company to a very large one through acquisitions over around 10, 15 years. And what that does to a company is, first of all, you have a completely different set of cultural things to address, but you definitely also, from an IT perspective, have a lot of things to address on-prem. And the situation we were in 2012 was, now we have this new great brewery, and we're all working together, we're all global, it looks great in a PowerPoint slide, but how do you achieve that in real life? Particularly if you start from the bottom up, you can start with a network, you can start with organizations, you can do all this basic stuff, but it'll take you years and years to get to a point where you can actually work together. So basically what we did, we started at the other end, we started at the top, and we actually used Office 365 as a collaboration layer. And then since we introduced it, starting in 2012, you can switch to the next slide now. Basically what we did was we started with that collaboration layer on top, and we've started standardizing our way down through the stack instead of building it up from the bottom. And you can say basically the migration itself has been it's been fairly unproblematic for us. I think one of the reasons, and this is also talking to my peers and other companies, was that we went full-blown from the beginning. I mean, I only wanted one tenant. I only wanted one standard globally. I didn't want to accommodate all these different languages or standard or anything like that. It's just one place, and we go for what it looks like out of the box. And I think that was part of it, but at the time, it was mainly because I didn't have the bandwidth to deal with all these discussions. I'd already been rolling out intranets for a few years in Carlsberg, so I know the cultural differences there. And if you've tried discussing with, I think it was a Swedish CEO, about the size of headlines on an intranet, which they insisted they couldn't use because the size was wrong, you know that you shouldn't open up that discussion, because once you do, it's impossible to close it again. So that is basically the approach we took, and over 2.5 years, we had around 25,000 people on Office 365, and we are running it to this day.
Great, thank you, Anis. And then next we'll have Ali Chadman from Computer Sciences Corp.
Okay, good morning. Computer Sciences, real quick by the stats, we're a very large IT services company, global. We're about to get much larger through the merger with HP Enterprise Services. And we're going to probably end up being the top three pure services player in the in the world as a result of that measure. Computer science is a very complex company. It's grown up from acquisitions. It deals with very complex projects, very complex and diverse industries, very secure in nature by the work that we have done with the governments around the world. And that security permeates everywhere within our culture. And as a result of that, one of the things that we had done was to stick with Lotus Notes for many, many years, because we were comfortable with that environment. It worked really well, and it was had all the security bells and whistles built into it. And what we realized was, not, you know, being the world's third largest notes user was not really helping us. We had issues with productivity with notes. We had people coming in and complaining of using notes, and they wanted to be able to use Outlook and all the tools, including myself. When I joined a company, I came in and looked at the Lotus Notes client, and I just didn't want to know what to do with it, frankly. So we wanted to be able to have that experience that was very comparable to others other companies and the experience of the folks coming in, not having to be tainted by the old technology that we had inside. But it was a very complex move because we had to unwire a lot of whole different things and then rewire them back up again for Office 365. We chose Office 365 because we have a vast number of different technologies that we've used. We have multiple web conferencing, audio conferencing, different ways of collaboration. And this allowed us to really have an umbrella function that was unified across the globe for all of our customers and employees and vendors to come together. And the mobility aspect, it was very large for us. We were a very mobile workforce. Not many of us work from offices. We're global in nature. We fly around to different parts of the world. We needed to have an always-on experience, not having to think about where to connect up to and how to, you know, resolve VPN addresses and so on and so forth. The other area that was difficult for us was a portion of our employee base has to be secure by nature. That means that they deal with highly sensitive information that our folks were not feel comfortable putting up in the cloud. So we ended up working with Microsoft, actually Microsoft MCS, and the Fast Track team designing a hybrid environment. So our designs and our implementation is hybrid by nature, hybrid Exchange, hybrid SharePoint, hybrid Skype. And that hybrid nature allows us then to be able to decide where to put specific users and documents and content that makes the most sense to our security team, to our legal and contracts, and then the bulk of our guys and girls run in the cloud itself. So that's the direction that we headed down to. CSC was a very early adopter of Office 365. As a matter of fact, we were one of the first ones to implement BPOS at our clients. So we've been involved since the BPOS days with Office 365, but it's the cobbler's son scenario. Although we did it for other people, we just didn't do it for ourselves. And finally, last year, we bit the bullet. We were going through a transformation of the company. We felt good in the space that we were at to be able to do it for ourselves, and we got engaged. Originally, we did try to do it ourselves. So, you know, our own services team, services internally at CSC also, we'd like to do it to ourselves first. So we wanted to be able to go and implement what we call a quick start environment, which is a rapid uptake of Office 365 and cloud-based collaboration tools. And we chose ourselves as the guinea pig for doing that. And we started to work with our own services team, with our own architects, with our own delivery people. And what we realized was we weren't going fast enough. And we weren't going fast enough because we had to resolve a lot of issues that were really core to the way we were doing things. We had to resolve things around Active Directory, federation of ID and access, security controls. And what we didn't want to do is to focus on the mechanics of this thing, and that's why we engaged the Fast Track team. And by doing that, we actually accelerated the velocity of our migrations by 5x. So we were go five times quicker than we were going before, simply for the fact that they had it all greased up, they knew what they were doing, and we had done the pre-work to make sure that we had a very tight connection between the CSC team and the Office 365 team. You can go to the next slide, I think there's some quotes there. And we were able to go from that crawl, walk, and run into the run phase much more quickly with the Office 365 team, working hand in hand with those guys than we'd done before. There were some lessons that we learned along the way, but one of the things that ended up as a result of that exercise was we actually have a customer-facing offering now that is based on the CSC experience itself, that embeds Fast Track, it embeds the Microsoft team side by side by the CSC team, and that's how we go to customers now, actually implement Office 365 for customers. The other area that, we can go one more slide because I'm going to run up here. The other area that's now becoming germane is, and actually Bob and I were talking about this, is the integration of HP Enterprise Services with CSC and the merger of the two companies. You bring 150,000 people, 65,000 people from very diverse backgrounds and implementations together. What we're finding is we're now actually breaking, I think, Office 365 features to some degree. So we're working very closely with the engineering team, try to resolve some of these really large merger issues that we're facing. And of course, the acquisition and the divestiture part of it are really interesting because I think we can, you know, we will be able to take that experience and apply it to the globe as we roll forward here. But a lot of issues that we had to deal with, by and large, we were successful working hand in hand with these guys, and the collaboration of our two teams was the most critical aspect, being able successful, and we managed to migrate the CSC base to in 3 months over to Office 365. It's working, it had some glitches, I'll talk about it in the panel here, but the biggest one was around the whole change management and the mindset shift of the users, not the technology necessarily. That was a big deal for us, and I can get into it, and I can, you know, answer questions that you may have.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ali. And then last, we're going to have Bob Davis.
Yeah, but before I start, let's just have a round of applause for these guys. I say that because they all make it sound so simple, but, you know, honestly, anybody who's moved to the cloud will tell you that it's not simple. And it's very rare in anybody's IT career that you'll lead a project, as these four have done, that will touch every single employee within their enterprise. And that's a pretty awesome accomplishment. So congratulations to all of you. First of all, I am in the engineering team within Office 365. I actually was involved in founding what today is known as Office 365. It was referred to as BPOS, which doesn't stand for big piece of something or other. It actually stands for Business Productivity Online Suite, but an acronym that could only be decided by a bunch of engineers. And even prior to that, something called Microsoft Managed Solutions. I've been at Microsoft 24 years, and during that time, the first 12 years or so, like all of you, I was in our IT organization and ultimately was responsible for Microsoft's global IT infrastructure. So I have a great deal of empathy for what it's like to be in enterprise IT and working with your internal customers and managing their expectations through change. When we started Office 365, however, we made one very, I would say, fatal mistake. And that was to think that moving your transition from on-premise to the cloud is entirely on our customers or on our partners or on even Microsoft's consulting organization. We've since come to realize that that is as important a part of the service as delivering the mail or as providing collaboration infrastructure. We made tremendous investments, not just through the fast track team of about 750 engineers around the globe that work with our customers every day, but also just in the technology to do migrations. We migrate just not mail, but also notes, Google, Gmail, G Drive, Box, Dropbox. All this technology is technology that we developed in-house to help with the migrations and such. So, you know, if I look at our investments that we made over the years, you know, one realization we wanted to make is every customer should be successful in moving to Office 365, and something that what we call Fast Track is our success service that's incorporated as part of Office 365. It's not something that you pay extra for. It's just part of your subscription with Office 365. We assign engineers to work with you to get from here to there. We know that every on-premise environment is unique, and you ultimately have questions that need to be answered, and we want to resolve those deployment and adoption challenges that cause friction to your move as quickly as possible. We obviously want to reduce cost and time. It's, you know, to pull 85% of your costs out of your migration, you can't have a migration that costs five times the amount of the monthly subscription to get you from here to there. We need to make that as inexpensive as possible and speed the time to value so that you get value out of what you're moving to. One of the big changes within Microsoft is something that we call DevOps. And what that means is that we want to make engineering accountable for every aspect of the service. In IT, when I used to run most of Microsoft's corporate infrastructure, we used to have this operations model where there might be an alert from the infrastructure. The operations team would follow a troubleshooting guide. And occasionally, we would meet with the engineers who actually built the product to say, hey, these are bugs. You really should get these fixed going forward. We've completely eliminated that in the way that we operate our service. There is no central ops team for Office 365. When we have an alert from the service, it goes directly to the engineers. And it's amazing how engineers don't like to get up in the middle of the night, how they fix the code, and we get a much more reliable service that way. So that's what we call DevOps, meaning that the actual developers who write the code are on the hook every hour of every day to fix the service in the event there's a problem. We did the same thing with moving to the service. Again, it's not our consultant's job. It's not our partner's job. It's ultimately our engineer's job to make sure that that is a great experience for our customers. And so we realized that mistake, and about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, Quinn and I, as well as others, said we're going to invest a lot of time and effort in this to build a success service. And in fact, through our investments that we've made, it used to be that if you went to the open market and talked to a consultant about moving to the cloud, they would charge you between $20 and $30 a seat to do that. Through our investments, we've brought the cost per seat migration down to about 33 cents. Now, you never pay that. That's why I say it's embedded in the cost of our service. But the reason we're able to do that is through engineering. We've brought that cost down tremendously. And we do that through analysis and automation. We call it moving from carbon, moving from a lot of people that are involved in this, to moving to greater automation that we can do. And then we just learn a lot. We're moving 5,000 customers a month to Office 365. Any customer over 150, well, actually over 50 seats, is eligible for Fast Track now. And that equates to about 5,000 customers per month. They range in size from 50 seats all the way up to the largest commercial company and government companies in the world at almost, well, a little over a million seats, one of them is. Moving on to our service. We have tremendous amount of experience from doing this so that you don't have to invent it every time. And so with that, that's where I'll conclude. I have another slide. You can see these are all things that are common to you that I don't need to go through. But you know, the initial experience for customers was that there was a lot of friction in moving to the cloud. It wasn't meeting expectations. It took a long time to deploy, and that introduces risks into a project. And then the customer value, if a project took 2 years to get there, it just wasn't compelling, and we needed to work to shorten that. So we owe all of our success to our customers and the feedback that they give us. And so my role today as part of this panel is just to listen to their experiences and feel how we can get better and get feedback from them and you as to how Microsoft can continue to improve.
Great, thank you, Bob. So my first question, first I'm gonna give a little bit of context and then we'll throw it out. So I thought we'd kind of jump to the end on the first question. You know, I've been at Microsoft obviously a long time, and I spend most of my days using pre-release software, even before online, we call it alpha and beta, and so I even lose track about sort of what's even the release software in the market. But my wife happens to work out of our house, and she works for one of the largest healthcare companies in the US. And so I'm reminded every day about sort of what most companies have for a corporate desktop. And in her case, she also happens to be an Office 365 customer, but she runs a Windows 7 and Office 2010 desktop. There's a ton of line of business integration. They still use a lot of InfoPath in her environment and others. And so my first question is, you know, how did you deal with the sort of the end user aspect of this in the change, and both in terms of either training or just getting them excited or motivated, but wanting to move, and then actually going through, like, how do you actually take that number of employees? As Bob said, you touch everybody in the organization when you go through a change like that. So let me throw that first out to Matina, and then we can...
In a way, we didn't have a lot of time. So we were lucky because we were already going from an Exchange environment to Office 365, so we weren't going for Lotus Notes. But we did have a communication strategy, and we did have champions within each of the lines of business. So we did have the quick guides for them. We gave them as much training up front as we could. We started communicating around 4 to 5 weeks before migration, and then every week they'd get emails, and we'd have some town halls as well. I think our biggest challenge was actually the morning after the migration, because even though we had coached, everybody knew it was coming, we'd had, you know, info sessions, etc. The morning after, we still had quite a legacy environment at the desktop level. So we ran into problems, and trying to migrate and make sure that 1,200 people are up and running when they come into the office in the morning, they don't want to wait for email to be working. And they didn't want to wait for some technician to come and see them when they were trying to fix. So that morning, I tell you, wear sneakers the day after your migration and make sure you're on the ground at 6 a.m. and you've got enough resources to help you out, because that was our one. It only would take 2-3 minutes per user to just handhold them, to, you know, point them, you know, what was going right or wrong. But that was one thing that I did not anticipate, was that little piece at the end.
In terms of sort of setting expectations or getting them excited or motivated, was there some things you did to like where they were like, wow, I can't wait for this change?
No, actually, we didn't give them a choice. Sadly, you always have some resistance to change. We just worked right through it, and they said it. We just told them it's coming. We just said it's exciting, yes, and but half the time they wouldn't even read the email. So we just drove through, and I think that was one message. We just kept the momentum going real hard so that change and resistance to change was just, you just plowed through it.
So. Ali, you came from a notes environment, so tell us a little bit about your experience with the end users.
Okay, sure. So let's just talk about the people being enthusiastic. We had lines lining up through the door and emails being begging folks, our team, to be the first ones to get onto Office 365 because people just hated notes. So the motivation for us was really simple. It was actually fighting off the crowd, and we had to be able to prioritize the teams and break up the company in waves to move them forward. One of the biggest challenges for us was, A, there were no Office clients on the desktops. There was no Outlook on the desktop, so we actually had to go and roll out Outlook to all the desktops, make sure they were compatible, they were working, some challenges there. But the biggest thing that we anticipated was the change from a human perspective being used to the interface being a certain way and the behavior of the app, of the Notes client, moving over to Outlook. Because we did Exchange, that was a big thing. The mail was a big thing for us. So that was a big deal that we anticipated. And ahead of the curve of the migration actually happening, we did, just Bettina was talking about, set up, we did a whole set of training videos around how to use Outlook, how to look at Lotus Notes, where the comparable features are at. And then the other thing that we did that really proved to be very valuable was we set up a specific help desk that was staffed by 50 people who were very, very well versed in Office 365 and the Microsoft clients to man the phone so somebody could walk up and say, I used to be able to do an attachment into an email with notes this way. I have no idea how to do it, and where do I look in Outlook? And they will actually handhold you through the exercise of going through the interface, logging onto your machine, showing you how it's done. And that was probably the biggest thing that we did that made a difference for us. And I would highly recommend it. If you're not coming from an environment where people are really clear on how to use the client tools, that can be a really big deal. The service itself was pretty seamless. We had issues around migration of the mail files and folders, for example, mechanical stuff that would resolve really quickly with the fast track team. And that was some of the things that we kind of had to go work through ourselves when we tried to doing it internally with CSC, and that's what we just said, it's just not worth it. We give it to the guys who are the experts in doing it, and we just focus on the bigger things around making sure the directory management works, the hand-holding of the user interface flip, and just the customer experience being king. And it worked out really, really well for us at the end, and we were able to get it done very quickly.
Okay. Sort of on that, yeah.
Sure. It's just that listening to this, we didn't do anything. We didn't tell people.
It's not like our company.
if they have Outlook already, in most markets, we just deployed Outlook up in advance, even if they were using Lotus Notes, so they were using that. And then when we switched, we didn't tell them. We just, switched the service behind the scenes. We had a market like in Greece, for instance. We had a market that they were using Lotus Notes already. And they were happy to get Outlook as part of the Office implementation because then I used to use Lotus Notes myself. So it was simpler for them to just use Outlook. So they were using that already. And then what we did was, it was 300 users. This was 10 days after we signed the contract. We basically created cloud accounts for them. We downloaded all their mail to their Outlook PST files, and then we switched the mail account. And they didn't realize anything had happened. It was the same service desk, the same people. It was behind the scenes that we made the change. And all of our focus was on making sure we had a good escalation path if there was any calls coming in. And then it was only after we secured that service, the Outlook Exchange service, that we started introducing some of the other services. Because once you have that, it's much simpler to just introduce SharePoint Online. We have this great new thing, here it is, and then people were happy with that. But we basically didn't do anything as part of the migration itself.
So when you think about sort of, we've talked a little bit about the traditional desktop user, if you will, coming from sort of an older piece of software, whether it's Microsoft or other. We also know that everyone today is, you know, in their personal life certainly is using, you know, lots of devices. Mobile is obviously a very, very large one, and of course tablets and others. Simon, you in your company, you mentioned in your intro a little bit about, you know, going mobile was a big factor in your decision to move. Love to hear a little bit about sort of the experience around different devices, endpoints, and
So we're right in, I have to say, we're right in the thick of it. Just to rewind one bit back was about the, so we led with Yammer when we went with Office 365. Kind of went with the low-hanging fruit, because one of the big things is answering the what's in it for me question. You know, we're making this change, what benefit we're going to get back. So whilst we put Yammer out there so people could, we can move our discussion groups up into Yammer and people can start getting used to and familiar with the new world and acclimatizing, behind the scenes, we then started working on the migration from Exchange on-premise to online. And you're right, Anders, it really is, nothing happens, right? There's four words, become three in the bottom right-hand side of Outlook, really, and that's it. No one really realizes they've made the shift. But what suddenly that release was the ability, they could get their emails on their phones. They could log in wherever. If they're walking to a station, they could suddenly go, oh, I've just forgotten something. Done, sent. And I think that was one really good transformational change that we just made through over about 3 months with the Velocity migrations that really changed the way people worked. But then we're now facing that thing, well, we've done that, and we've now lit up the other services, and the challenges are, well, what's in it for me now? SharePoint's here. We've got some colleagues in the audience, and we're building the intranet at the moment. So they're kind of seeing where that's coming. So, but we've designed that for mobile as well as online, and they're starting to get that benefit. They can access our services anytime, anywhere, and it's frictionless. And that's the point we're trying to get to.
And just maybe it's kind of open to all of you, in terms of sort of your company's approach to, you know, users bringing their own devices or using different devices, what are some of the experiences you have and just sort of the approach that you take? And whoever wants to go first can.
No, I can speak to it. So, sorry, I can speak to it. So in our company, again, we're a little bit different use case than most others, because we have a split personality of having company-issued devices as well as bring your own. So we need to be able to accommodate both of them. So I actually have a device that's my own, and I use it online. So it's really important for us to be able to construct an infrastructure that can accommodate a lot of back-ended services that are secured. So that's the way we approach it. And the really good thing about Office 365, I think the point that people are making here is that you can actually log on to the service and be able to consume it from any device wherever you are. And our multi-factor authentication, we have an MFA and a single sign-on that front ends all of our back-end services come into play. As long as you're authenticated, any service is available to you on the backside, and we try to keep nothing that is dedicated to be for you to be on the network. So that's the way we approach it, and it works very, very well in CSC.
Yeah, and so we support a bring your own device policy. We have a full estate of the usual desktops, laptops, and mix and match. But one of the great things about allowing people to bring their own tools is we second a lot of staff out to work with customers and clients. And there's always a requirement for that customer to provide the IT to them, provide the desktop or the laptop. And we've had some really good stories where they've gone and the customer's not been quite ready, and they've just pulled their iPad out of the bag and gone, that's fine. I can just get on and work, I can connect to Mott's system, and they go, actually, we use Office 365. I said, well, that's great. I'll just log into your Office 365 and I'll just get going. And that makes a transformational difference, because our guys walk in, they can get on and work. The flexibility it brings is really, really good.
Great. Let's jump sort of back to the beginning part of this then. We sort of talked about the end user a little bit, but most of our audience is IT, obviously. And so tell me, I'm going to throw the question, and I'll point it to somebody here, but the expectations that your leadership had in terms of this move, you know, both how they looked at it, what their goals were, and how it met sort of, you know, meet or didn't meet expectations. So maybe we'll start with Anis, and we'll go from.
Sure. There were two expectations, and people laugh when I say them. One was that it would be cost neutral, And the other one that we would was that we would get a global address book in Outlook. And I did that on purpose, because then it's easy to become a success. If you can keep it to that, it's a great formula. But that was basically what we went for at the time, because at the time it was this working globally and not having transparency on where people were, and that was all we promised. So everything else we've added over time has been benefit on top of that.
Bettina?
I think, let me just make sure, yes, I'm on. We had two expectations, slightly different. One was it had to dramatically reduce cost, so it could not be cost neutral, otherwise it wouldn't have been a project we would have looked at. Only projects going to the board had to have a 40% cost savings, so that was our mandate. The second one is it had to be operationally seamless. We're an airline, so we literally had to make sure there was not one blip in the service, and we delivered on both. So I think, you know, when we moved over, it was so seamless that people didn't really know from at board level or at senior management level. It just happened, and that worked really well as well.
You know, one of the things that I'm gonna Bob sort of chime in here. We expect our customers to change and transform as we go to this change. But obviously Microsoft, you know, we have a very long history of what I kind of say is we created an ecosystem around sort of our packaged software, our on-premise software, and have lived through, I think, every Office and Windows update since, you know, Windows 95 and Office 95. And so both us and our customers and our partners sort of molded around sort of this release cycle together with, you know, there was a very, and I think you all know in the audience, sort of this very sort of predetermined behavior from when we would have an early look to when you would actually be able to test and pilot to when you would actually be able to deploy in a way to do it. And with the online world, it's very, very different, as we all know. And so, you know, one thing I asked Bob to do is talk a little bit about how we changed at Microsoft ourselves, and then also sort of how that maps to sort of how our customers are changing as well.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, having been in IT, I've seen this bad tendency with something like Office 365 that I don't see in this group here, and that is, you know, your CIO, and we have one here, they're going to pick their very best people to lead this project. And then some of the things we've been talking about earlier is then oftentimes the tendency is that once you get something like Office 365 initially deployed, your tendency is to take those very best people and put them on the next big challenge. The issue that we see with that, and one of the things that if you talk to our CIO that they've completely changed, is that, you know, we used to be, as Quinn said, in this notion of 3-year waves of innovation. You would all skip a wave, so it actually turned out to be 6 years of innovation, because you'd get budgets and put people around it. But now we deliver ripples of innovation. Any of you who've looked at the Office 365 roadmap will see an average of 35 new capabilities every month. And Microsoft can't tell you how those capabilities are going to map to business value. Only really good people within your organization can do that. And so, you know, I think it's a credit to all of you that you have great people still on the service, because you're really looking at it as something that can transform your enterprises. It's just something that I would caution everyone here on is, you know, this isn't just a lift and shift, throw it over the wall, Microsoft will run it like a traditional outsourcing will, and if you want new capabilities, you have to sign a statement of work to get additional work done. You really need, you know, an ITIL parlance, a service manager or something like that that's constantly watching what's coming out. I'd be interested in sort of how you've organized around that as well.
Yeah, we have service delivery managers for each of the components of Office 365. We've outsourced the day-to-day operations to Tata Consulting. So they manage the global operations. And then we have the existing operations and service desk and all that in each of the markets still. Mm-hmm. So we've just basically put a global operations layer on top of that to handle escalations and talk to Microsoft if there's anything. And then on our side, what we've established is a decentralized team in Hong Kong, St. Petersburg, France, and Copenhagen. Who then one or two people managing each of the services. We have two for Exchange and Skype. We have one for SharePoint, who's actually here at the conference, I think. And that's basically how we've done it. And they're the day-to-day, you can say, mix of service delivery, architects, and operations responsible.
It's great.
Just a quick update on that one. When you start your project, you're not going to hand it over. It's a journey. and we had the ops team, like you have the DevOps team on an ongoing basis. We had the ops team as integrally part of the project. They have to be. They have to really understand the service. They really have to understand the intricacies of the service. And we still have an ongoing project. I mean, it's been 18 months since we went live, but they were constantly bringing out new features, and we just have always on our operational plan, we have an annual operational plan. Office 365 is just one of the ongoing projects on that operational plan. So whatever the next rollout of how do we leverage OneDrive, or how are we going to implement SharePoint across all the portals, it's just an ongoing project. It's not a project. It's really just an ongoing way of working, and it's more an operational project than a traditional start-end project.
So to address some of Bob's point, just in terms of structure for CSC, we have a central, what we call an offering team, which is all of the architects and the designers of the solution are always together in one location. And they interact with a launch team that actually disseminates the information down into the population and to our customers. So it's a process. You know, you define it, you design it, you put it together, you communicate the communication plan, then it's executed by the launch team and it goes out to the customers. One of the areas that we haven't done a good job in CSC is we did a good job migrating people over, but we have done a really poor job of actually taking that initial cutover and providing the additional value with Sway, with Flow, with Delve, with some of the other tools that are in the toolkit. We've done a very bad job with our client base and explaining what those things are and how to drive value from them, because simply we get bogged down. There's so much work that we have to be able to do that we've done very minimal efforts in actually taking the next wave of innovation and driving it down. So if there's a way for us to be able to engage with Microsoft, and this is one of the things that's on the slide about the asks and what we can do, is we need to find a way to partner up, you know, on the innovation side, not just the migration side, with Microsoft, and have a way to be able to have Microsoft evangelize with our teams and educate our folks and how to really adopt those things. Because we can experiment and we can play, but it's much better coming in from the folks who did Delve, who did Sway, who did Flow, to come in and say, this is what you can really do, guys. You haven't even seen the art of the possible. And I think that would be a really useful thing to collaborate on the next wave of the adoption.
Great.
Yeah, that's really good feedback. I was going to say, so when I think about sort of the conversation so far, it sounded pretty smooth. Clearly, we know it's not that smooth. So why don't we talk a little bit about the bumps and really be unfiltered on the bumps, because I think that's how everybody learns. I know myself, I have to do things to learn, and I would have booked a different hotel now that my experience in learning this trip. So tell us, whoever wants to go first, maybe Simon, tell us.
Yeah,
bumps,
I suppose, yes.
Good, the
bumps.
Bad, and the ugly.
just to go one point before, one of the bad bits is, if you've never done this before, you need to bring some experience in, and that's a situation we found ourselves in as an IT team. Actually, I want to postscript this. I'm not an IT pro, okay? I'm a civil engineer. I've come into IT less than 3 years ago, and I've been picking this up on a super steep learning curve. Our team is made up, in fact, there's a couple of them in here today, that of traditional IT service delivery people. We recognize that we just did not understand the world we're moving into from a traditional DMS. We had to bring experience in from outside. And that was one of the first bumps. It took us a little while to actually realize that we needed that extra skill set in, and it's still a bit bumpy because I think we need more, you know, whilst I'm reasonably good, I think we need some more people. But yes, it's like moving from a nice still pool of tools that you've got, and then you move to Office 365, the pool's still there, but someone keeps just filling it up. There's more and more water going in, and occasionally someone just drops a rock in for fun, and a leaf lands on it, and you get these bubbles and ripples, and you get your users saying, oh, wait a minute, that button was up here, but now it's there, and you get this. You're constantly reacting to change, and the only way to really take that on is we monitor many different sources for change. There's a roadmap published, we get NDA lists from Microsoft to tell us what's going on. I've got my eyes out as an MVP, but there's a community out there who's also watching for all these little changes and ripples, and we tend to understand the impact of those changes and ripples before they come to us, because there's like a billion eyes on this product. Someone's probably spotted the change already. Someone's already reported it and fed it back into the community. And the other part of that trouble is you'll see a message center alert saying, yes, modern UI is coming to SharePoint, or Praise is coming to Delve. There's no timeline on it. It may come tomorrow, next week, or in the case of Praise for Delve, I won't look at my watch is not big enough. I need to get a calendar probably the size of this room. It's about 18 months down the track, and it still hasn't landed in our tenant. So reacting to change is really quite difficult. It really is sort of a moving feast, and that's where we really need a lot of support from Microsoft explaining, this is the change, this is when it's coming, and this is what the kind of impact and use case is from it, and then we can spin off from that point.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, definitely there were bumps. I think that's a nice way of putting it. Some of them are quite big. Especially when, I mean, our story was about putting this as a thin layer on top of a completely, you know, it was like separate companies' infrastructure. And that generates bumps. Well, I think the main ones for us, and I have a whole presentation on this tomorrow if you want to get into more detail about it, but basically, the ones we expected were the ones around migration and security legal issues and stuff like that. That actually turned out to be the least of our problems, because those were, that went smoothly, actually. That did go completely smoothly. It was, the challenge for us was all the underlying stuff. One of the things that surprised us was how much control you need to have over your Active Directory for this to work smoothly for users. Because in our case, there's a lot of things you can get away with in an on-prem environment that you just cannot get away with when those users are automatically migrated to a standard service. We had meeting rooms with active accounts being used by teams for storing documents. We had shared accounts used by seasonal workers who would just, you know, pin it on a dashboard and switch it around. We had all of those things. But the lingering one that we're still struggling with to this day is the network, because what we came from was, as I say, separate IT organizations. They had different approaches to network. They had mainly hub and spoke designs, but a hub and spoke design is not very good when all your traffic starts going outside the company. And we're still struggling with that, and particularly in China, where we have around 6,000 users. And the government firewall and all this stuff. There's a lot of issues with some of the services that are very susceptible to network issues, like Skype for Business. Exchange doesn't matter, because Exchange, if you get your email a few minutes late, nobody will notice. But if you have a video call and the answer is a few minutes late, people will notice. And that's the one that's still one of
it's
the main
really,
ones
really
for
good
us.
Feedback. In fact, I think Bob's team is obviously responsible for those, fixing those bumps. I think connectivity is probably one of the most common things that we hear back from customers. And you know, maybe share with us a little bit, Bob, in terms of what we do and sort of what are common problems that customers encounter.
So one of the things we do with the Fast Track service is we work to identify up front. And again, part of the learnings that we've gotten from our customers is to identify some of these challenges up front, particularly as you make the move to things like Skype for Business, whether it's for PBX replacement or for conferencing. We have now assessments that are done. We've actually built tooling into the product itself to do analytics from all of those endpoints to identify hotspots in advance. So, but again, that comes directly from customer feedback of the areas that we need to provide more insight.
One other thing that, again, just to share our experience and maybe feedback from Microsoft is, I think there may be an assumption on the Microsoft part that everybody's going to go to the cloud wholesale. And I don't think that's probably all that real, because there's a lot of companies, including us and many of our customers, who have to retain an on-prem footprint for many different reasons. And this new world of hybrid, where you actually split the traffic between on-prem and the cloud variant of it, is real. And some of the decisions that Microsoft is making, for example, Cloud Connector Edition, and the perspective around all cloud actually breaks what we have done and what our customers have done on the hybrid environment. It's a real challenge, because we kind of find out after the fact that something was done that broke an entire architecture, and then we have to sit back and roll, and it becomes a quite an intense teaming effort with Microsoft trying to figure out where to go from there. So
yeah, I mean, there's certainly unintended consequences. We had one example, I'll just share one with you from last year in terms of the bumps, is that we had one of our customers was on the Eastern Seaboard, and they were using, you know, obviously their Active Directory in their own data center, but then of course the 365 cloud. And so their data center ended up, during the storms, ended up being not operational. But yet, of course, our 365 service was up because of the different data centers and being replicated. But they couldn't authenticate in because their Active Directory was down. And so, of course, right up to their CEO, you know, came over and talked to Satya and said, hey, like, this seems weird. Like, we can't access the service, but it's up and running because of the authentication. And it was a very complex topic to explain to, you know, two CEOs that they're like, well, hey, what is going on here? I think Bob will remember this one. And it was just really kind of an unintended consequence of not realizing in that situation what was going to happen. And then they said, well, can't you unhook it? And we said, no, we can't unhook it because that would actually break all of the security. If we were able to do that, that would break all of the security and you wouldn't have been secure in the first place. So there's no question these are some industry challenges and Microsoft challenges.
Yeah, and the hybrid statement is actually very important to us. We are uniquely capable of running both hybrid and the cloud, so anything that we do that makes that not work for our customers is something we absolutely want to rectify, because no competitor can run both on-premise and in the cloud in the same way that we can.
That's a major, major selling point for both of our companies. Mm-hmm.
Let's explain some of our bumps. We had two interesting bumps. We were going from a private cloud, so we were not going from on-prem. We were going from a private cloud to Office 365, and the supplier that had the private cloud put all kinds of wrenches in spokes in the wheel. So they had a load balance. It had quite an interesting setup, and we lost a lot of time trying to get four companies across six different time zones, the Fast Track team, our team, et cetera, to actually really get that data out. So for us, it was not as easy to start that very first migration. And then we had a very interesting bump. Just you migrate 95% or 98% of your mailboxes, and then on the last day when you switch over, you migrate the last two or three. And one of our technicians mistyped the IP address, and it wouldn't. So we were waiting for the last three to migrate, and we couldn't propagate, and it wouldn't happen. And we're sitting there sweating because we could not go back. We were a simple MRS, which is actually quite a complex migration. And we're waiting, and they said it takes 40 minutes, and 40 minutes passed, and nothing was coming in, and we thought, my goodness, what do we do? And somebody actually realized they mistyped the IP, and so they realized, luckily, then we had to wait another 40 minutes. But I tell you, those 40 minutes, I sweated more.
The Carlsberg was getting warm.
So when it came in, it was like, yes, we did it. So.
I think the worst thing that happened in ours was that we had a, this was going back to the Active Directory stuff and having control over that. We had a Russian CEO who had an account both in Western Europe and Eastern Europe. What happens is that the account that comes there first, so all of a sudden he had no mailbox because it has the same email in both accounts. So they merge. That's something we became aware of in our process, and we had to make sure we had none of those. So there's a lot of fun stories along the way.
Awesome. So why don't we open it up a little bit to the audience and see, I think there's going to be some microphones somewhere. Prize for the first question. Whoever wants to ask the first question?
Okay, here we go.
We followed.
Can you just repeat the question
a little bit
because other people can.
Yeah, so the question was, did we do any planning or deep diving on network analysis before we made the jump to Exchange Online? Yes, we did. We took all the spreadsheets Microsoft sent to us. We invented our own spreadsheets to try and work out what was going on.
we deliver over here.
we went through that complete process, and you know, and our infrastructure guy still lost sleep. Still wasn't going to happen. We're similar to you, global company, 4 data centers around the world, big hub and spoke, everything being pushed down the WANs. We thought it was going to be horrific, right? Because you've only got one internet breakout at each of these locations. We thought it's going to be scary. So the panic set in, and we phased it over 3 months in the end, and we did velocity migrations office by office. There wasn't a blip, right? We made one or two little mistakes at the beginning, but once we got into the swing of things, we're just churning offices every day for 3 months.
I think we would strongly recommend it, and we do in our fast track service and help our customers. I think the connectivity network assessment is a critical piece.
So the connectivity network assessment is actually a 1 week.
That's right.
I'm asking about beyond the 1 week.
Oh, you've got to keep doing
there
it.
There is a 3 to 4 week assessment or an even deeper time.
Yes, you can. Figure out what's appropriate.
Yeah,
for particularly.
So the question is, or the point was, we do a cursory assessment. Again, we have spreadsheets and calculators that you can use when you're doing these asynchronous services like email, like SharePoint, and OneDrive. We can calculate average speeds based on file size. Those are usually sufficient for customers, particularly if they then go through a phased migration where they start to take, you know, 100 today, 200 tomorrow, and the network team's monitoring their pipes. If you're going to go to voice, that's when we actually work with even a third party to come in and do a much more exhaustive network.
And that's what we did for our Skype implementation. We did a very deep analysis of a network and predict the user experience and hotspots, and working with our India team, for example, and how they would have the experience. That was the Skype piece was the piece that we had to focus on.
Okay. We have another one over here.
Yes, a question about SharePoint Online performance. You talked a lot about migration and Outlook and all that, and also about network performance. Can you elaborate a little bit about how much did you move workloads to SharePoint Online, and has that been successful?
I can start. I mean, basically, we didn't move any workloads to SharePoint Online until after we'd been running this for a while. What we found in terms of performance is that there's a lot of, basically, the performance itself is okay, but once you start moving things that are performance critical, you should be very careful about architecture and how to set those up. We did we're running an intranet project right now, for instance, and it's going to be the default homepage when you start your browser, so it better perform. And what we found was that the initial prototypes for that, it used a lot of the search web parts and all that, and I don't know what went wrong, but it went from being okay to being like 30 or 40 seconds before the page loaded.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's because it's pulling on some back-end services. There's a lot of, you know, inconsistencies in the code and stuff. And so it's something you have to be careful about if it's performance critical. You have to really think about how you do it. But the baseline service, I think I would still say it's a little slow. I mean, from seeing some of the demos they do here, where you just click, 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 and then you're done. It's not the experience I have, even at home with a good network and everything. It's setting up a site where you have to do a lot of things. You have to have a little bit of patience, right? And you have to have your coffee next to you and go, yeah.
I'll talk about a few things that we've done on the SharePoint service. There's more to come that would be different than if you're running it on premises. First of all, the more modern versions of SharePoint that we have now, if you deploy 2016 on premises, you would get this as well. We use the web apps to render. So now when you click on a PowerPoint file, it used to be, you know, you might have a big file that's stored up there. You clicked on it. It used to have to download to your machine to then open up in PowerPoint Resident on your machine. And that was absolutely the experience where you would click, go get coffee, come back, see the PowerPoint file. Now what happens when you click on it, it quickly renders using the web apps, the PowerPoint web app, which handles what most people want to do with those big files, which is just scroll through and see something. The other thing that we have that you wouldn't have on premises is we've invested a lot in our edge network. And so our edge network you know, validates the auth traffic much more quickly, and for frequently used things like portals and things like that, will render them more quickly. So what I would suggest with all of this, though, is rather than take my word for it, absolutely pilot and experiment with some of these things just by using a pilot tenant and seeing what the performance is like in advance, and then our fast track team can work through that with you.
Yeah. And just to add to that one, the way we did it was to prioritize our applications and the SharePoint systems and Jive or whatever, Notes databases, into static content, and then workflow apps and full-blown applications. And we moved the static content first over to Bob's point, and it works really well when you have static content. And now we're just beginning to address the workflow-based applications and then re-engineering the actual apps that are developing Notes into the Microsoft stack.
Great. One more question over here.
We've heard several times today about the value of engaging with the Fast Track Center. And I have kind of a handful of questions about how to engage with them effectively. I think the first one is for Bob. Which is specifically...
Is that a softball question?
Which is specifically around, you talked about how you recognize that everyone's environment is unique, but what guidance do you have to offer when the feedback we're getting from the Fast Track Center is, well, that's a scenario we've never seen before, or that's more complex than is within the scope of what we're supposed to do at the Fast Track Center. And I'll go ahead and ask the second question so that the panel can be thinking about it while Bob answers that. The second question is, when you've engaged the Fast Track Center, can you describe the cadence and the depth of your interactions with them and how you chose the right people to be on them? Were they project managers or technical leads or technical engineers, right? Who was really working with the Fast Track Center and what did that engagement look like?
So I'll take the first one. So in terms of what's, we have consistently over, like every 6 months, we increase the scope of what the Fast Track Center will take on. It used to be that we didn't do, you know, multi-directory things, and now we do. So we should revisit, you can come up to me afterwards and let's talk about your specific scenario, but we absolutely want to, this shouldn't be a service that's just used by a small percentage of our customers. We want it to be available and used by all. So we also have a whole group of what we call fast track architects that we think of it as almost like an escalation point where the average fast track engineer could say, wow, this is something I haven't seen before. Bring in an architect and let's figure out how to address your problem, because we're all signed up to do that. So let's talk afterwards. Yeah,
and I'll speak to your other question. Actually, with Fast Track, we had quite a lot of complexities, and many times they had to escalate, but not once did they come back to us and say we can't handle it. They whatever the challenge was, we'd work it through and we'd figure out a way to manage that. What we found was we had no internal expertise at all. Fast Track was not local, so we were always working on Skype calls, etc. So I realized within the first pretty much 10 days that there was a knowledge gap between the Fast Track team and our local team. And so what we did is I spoke to Microsoft and I said, look, I need a gold certified, you know, individual on the island. Tell me who your local suppliers are that they can handhold and help communicate in a way, help translate kind of what the Fast Track team was doing with the skills that we had within the company. And we really had a massive knowledge gap. So it was kind of a three-way team. We had the Fast Track individuals. We had our in-house resources that were trying to scale up knowledge-wise as fast as they could. And then we had a great supplier, local supplier, and they literally were there all the time. So that the local supplier, in a way, kept the knowledge after migration. So we kept a service agreement with them as well, so that we actually had that triad, and it worked really nicely.
I'll just add a little bit of learnings that we've had around Fast Track, and that is, you know, when we first did it, one of the things that we kept running up against were customers were approaching their deployment in a very traditional way, and they would say like, we'll do this over like 2 years, you know, and so it would take a very long time. And in fact, some customers would just start and they would literally just roll back again. They would just stop because they would kind of get stuck and they wouldn't get there. So one of our goals when I first created it was to actually sort of change the mindset a bit and try to show customers, look, you've got a fully scaled built out online service, so you can approach it differently. You know, we can put on millions of users tomorrow and it's not an issue for the service. We can take that kind of load every single day, an additional load. And so in doing that, we sort of had this one approach. And so what we've learned, though, obviously, is there's not just the size of customers, but the complexity of customers. And so even just recently, we announced kind of a change in Fast Track where we actually have a what we call sort of an enterprise-focused group, sort of a mid-market focus group, and a sort of an SMB focus group. And we sort of, it's hard to pivot on the different customer segments, but it's really around the complexity, and we'll put the appropriate resources. But that'll really help the experiences for the different customers so they get an experience that's completely tuned for what they want and for what they need. Whether it's like in Anna's case, your case, where it was, you know, you had a very complex set of infrastructure you needed to deal with, or whether it's somebody who said, look, I might be very large, but it's not very complex, and I want to go very quickly. We've had customers like that with hundreds of thousands of mailboxes, but they're not a very complex environment in what they need to do, and so they can move very quickly. And so that hopefully that'll help going forward, and will help our customers' experiences going forward. And I'll just remind everyone that the Fast Track is available to everyone that's an Office 365 customer, as Bob said, in perpetuity. And for any time you need it, you can go and use it for any workload, additional workloads, for help with existing workloads. That's why we put it there, and we take it very serious. You know, we put it in engineering. Bob said, why was it engineering led? I'm in the marketing side, but one of the things that I like about being in engineering is that's where the buck stops. We run the service. If the service isn't working, you're not working. And so our goal with Fast Track and having engineering is to make the engineering team accountable for the value we deliver and the experience our customers have.
Just
put it on Bob, by the way.
Yeah, just to follow up. So we used it, we consumed it differently, right? So we're more in the, we face a problem, we don't know how to solve it. Let's ask Microsoft, ask Fast Track. So we asked, how do we get our mailboxes to the cloud? They came in, they helped to structure the process, and then we just took the baton on. How do we drive user adoption? Here's a whole load of philosophies and mindsets. Worked with the success manager at the time, worked with them, got a framework. That's great, we'll take it on from here. So our engagements, and they keep going, we've just sparked up an engagement for Skype 2015, which would be the same. Get us to a point where we can understand what we're doing, knowledge, someone at the end of the phone if it's not going quite right, and then we keep moving on. And that's how we keep learning. If not, we, as a service, it's gonna be really difficult to support something if we haven't kind of been through the journey ourselves. So that's how we approach it.
I know we're out of time, and I want to keep everybody on time. I'll answer your question. We can take your question just offline, if you don't mind, at the end of the session. I ran out of prizes, too, but we'll get one for you. But I do want to just say thank you very much to our panel here and our customers. Thank you so much for coming.